It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and online at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Most people don't know how they can tell what their loan is. They know that their loan is being handled by Sallie Mae, and they're going, well, I don't know. And the way you find out is there is a website, nslds.ed.gov, and that is the National Student Loan Database Service. And if you log in there, you can look and see what all the loans are that you have that are in your name. Now, you have to log in and have an ID and a password and a PIN and some other things like that, and it takes a little while to do that. So once you get your information and you look in and you can see, that will give you a list of all your loans. Now, all the loans that are there are federal loans. That website is 99% accurate. 99% of the federal loans will be in there.
Consumer law attorney Jason Crumbine talks about federal and private student loans, your legal rights about federal student loans, and what to do if you have trouble repaying a federal student loan. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn how a debt buyer in Chesapeake, Virginia was stopped dead in its tracks by a judge who applied the law of evidence to a debt collection case. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 198, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. What do former Virginia First Lady Ann Holton, Virginia Workers' Compensation Commissioner Wes Marshall, and former president of the College of William & Mary, Gene Nickel, all have in common? They've all appeared on WRIR within the past 6 months on this show. No other radio station in Richmond can make that claim. No other radio station offers WRIR's variety of underrepresented news, views, and music. If you like what you hear and want to continue hearing it, please call 622-9747 to make your gift or donate online at www.wrir.org to keep Law for the Rest of Us on Radio for the Rest of Us. Thank you. And now, this week's News You Can Use. In January 2013, a City of Chesapeake General District Court judge issued a landmark ruling in a debt buyer case that has brought collection activity in Chesapeake, Virginia, practically to a halt. Michigan-based Asset Acceptance buys unpaid debts from credit originators such as credit card companies, health clubs, and telecommunications and utilities providers, as well as other debt buyers, and attempts to collect them. Asset Acceptance has purchased tens of millions of dollars of consumer accounts for pennies on the dollar. It targets accounts that other collectors have pursued and are more than a year past due, and in some cases attempts to collect debts that are more than 10 years old. Some of this debt is too old to be legally enforceable. In the case in Chesapeake, Virginia, Asset Acceptance allegedly bought a $12,000 debt from Navy Federal Credit Union and sued the alleged debtor. Asset Acceptance attached three documents to its lawsuit: an affidavit from its employee, a bill of sale and assignment of accounts, and four pages from a spreadsheet or database. However, the court found that none of this evidence proved that the defendant owed anything. The affidavit did not indicate the alleged source of the information. The bill of sale did not reference the defendant or the defendant's account, and the spreadsheet did not state when the defendant last used the credit card, nor how the principal, interest, and fees were calculated. In dismissing Asset Acceptance's lawsuit, the City of Chesapeake General District Court judge observed that Navy Federal Credit Union chose not to rely on its own records to sue the defendant, but instead sold them to Asset Acceptance. The records were sold with no representations or warranties about the validity of the debt. Asset Acceptance had no access to the collection history records of Navy Federal Credit Union. Finally, the spreadsheet submitted to the court was confusing and unclear, at one point claiming a debt of just under $2,000, and at another point claiming a debt of more than $12,000. Although the evidence was no different than the evidence presented in thousands of debt buyer lawsuits, this time the judge found the evidence failed to prove that the defendant owed anything to Asset Acceptance, and dismissed the lawsuit, despite the fact that the defendant did not even appear in court. The case, Asset Acceptance LLC versus Andrew Woolard, currently is on appeal to the City of Chesapeake Circuit Court. With this week's News You Can Use, I'm Marty Wegbright, host of the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. Legal education is legal empowerment and an essential part of the struggle for fairness, equality, and justice. Since 2005, WRIR has made programs like the Legal Aid Radio Show possible so you can hear what nobody else will broadcast. Whether it's unrepresented news, views, or music, WRIR is the only outlet for cultural diversity in Richmond, and you, our listeners, make it possible. Call 622-9747 to make your gift, or donate online at www.wrir.org to keep Law for the Rest of Us on Radio for the Rest of Us. Thank you. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org. We are here at the offices of Crumbine Consumer Legal Services in the near west end of Henrico County, and we are speaking with Jason Crumbine, friend of the show, and we will be talking about student loans. Welcome back to the show, Jason.
Thank you very much. I'm glad that I could be here with you today.
Well, now, I understand that there are two different types of student loans, which was news to me. So would you educate our listeners as to the two basic types of student loans and how to tell them apart?
The two major types of student loans are federal student loans. Those are loans guaranteed by the Federal Department of Education, and private student loans. There is also a sort of halfway in between that is a hybrid loan that are done by primarily the state agencies.
So how would you tell them apart?
Very simple. The federal student loans, most people don't know how they can tell what their loan is. They know that their loan is being handled by Sallie Mae, and they're going, well, I don't know. And the way you find out is there is a website, nslds.ed.gov, and that is the National Student Loan Database Service. And if you log in there, you can look and see what all the loans are that you have that are in your name. Now, you have to log in and have an ID and a password and a PIN and some other things like that, and it takes a little while to do that. So once you get your information and you look in and you can see, that will give you a list of all your loans. Now, all the loans that are there are federal loans. That website is 99% accurate. 99% of the federal loans will be in there. There are some older loans, because they're still working on getting backdated loans into the computer system, may not be in there. Conversely, if your loan is not listed, there's a 99% probability that it is a private loan.
So focusing on the federal loans, I gather that this is a big problem, that there are lots of federal student loans out there, and this may be our next financial crisis after the foreclosure crisis and the dot-com crisis. What's all that about?
It is exactly the same problem that happened with the mortgages. It's the same problem that happened, at least in part, with the dot-coms. It's closer to the mortgage problem, and that is that people are getting and have been getting student loans for a very long time. The average student graduates today with more than $35,000 in student loans. That's a tremendous amount of money. Not everybody who graduates from school, from college or university or whatever, has the money to pay that money back. And they don't always have a good job immediately coming out to figure out exactly how they're going to come up with a plan to make those payments, particularly in today's economy. That's a difficult situation. So now you have somebody who has just graduated from college. They have typically some sort of a grace period, anywhere between 6 and 9 months after they, and the technical term is separate from college. Not everybody graduates. After they graduate, after they leave the school, they have 6 to 9 months to start making payments. Not everybody has a job. Not everybody has a job just in general these days, so it's a bit of a problem. And the total amount of student loans is enormous. The quantity of student loans that are out there as compared to the mortgages is actually larger than the total amount of mortgage debt that is out there. It is in excess of $1 trillion in outstanding student loans. That's a lot of money.
So students graduate or they separate from college, as you say. They have a 6 to 9 month so-called grace period, and then they are expected by the terms of the student loan to start paying it back. What are the payment options for a federal student loan? I gather there's at least three of them.
Well, there's three, but one of them is sort of there are multiple sub-variations. I'll talk about that one first. The standard repayment plan, which is you just simply start making payments, takes the loan and amortizes it over 10 years. So over the next 10 years, you'll pay off that loan. The variation on that is extended repayment, and you pay that loan off over 20 to 25 years, depending on exactly what kind of terms you can set yourself up on. There are at least two, if not three, other variations of payment plans that a person can get on with a federal student loan. Those three are the income-based repayment, the income-contingent repayment, and the new one, which was recently approved in the last couple of years, called Pay As You Earn, which is very similar to income-based repayment.
Okay, so let's take those one at a time. What is the income-based repayment?
Income-based repayment is a payment plan that is based upon the income that you have. You must recertify each year how much income it is and what your sort of circumstances are. And there is a both federal law and Code of Federal Regulations provision that controls how they're supposed to analyze that, and it's the totality of your circumstances. So if you have lots of income but also lots of expenses, for example, if you are regularly hospitalized for some sort of medical issue, or if you have a very high car payment, or if your rent is occupying a lot of your expenses, then your payment will be relatively low. Now, they also have to look at that in context of what is reasonable, because if you are making a lot of money, it doesn't seem exactly fair to say that you should be allowed to pay, you know, $10,000 a month for rent or mortgage and pay nothing towards your student loans. Income contingent repayment is very similar. It's a different federal law and federal regulation that covers that, and different loans are covered by the income-based repayment, IBR, and income-contingent repayment. The newer loans that were taken out after 2007 are subject to the new plan of how the payments work called Pay As You Earn.
Now, so what is Pay As You Earn?
It's very similar to both the income-based repayment and the income-contingent repayment, and it's just subject to a different federal regulation because it's a newer loan.
Now, are these plans something that the student borrower has to ask for, or are they going to be automatically put into the proper plan?
They have to actually ask for it. Normally, you'll go into the standard repayment if you don't say anything. That's the 10-year repayment, and they'll be expecting you to make payments, and they're expecting you to pay off your loan within 10 years.
So what happens if you miss a payment on a federal student loan?
The stages of, for lack of a better term, default are that first thing that happens is that you become delinquent on your loan. You don't actually default on your loan. That first payment becomes late. From day one through day 270, you are merely delinquent. You are not in default because it's a federal loan. That situation obviously has a negative consequence on your credit report, but because it's not a default, it's something that allows you to fix the problem by going into an income-based repayment, an income contingent repayment, or a pay-as-you-earn repayment. And you can rehabilitate the loan. Once you hit day 270, your loan is now in default.
So tell us, what is the difference between being considered merely delinquent and being considered in default?
Mostly it's who's servicing it. And there is a related piece, which is that the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, the federal law that governs debt collection, only applies to loans that are in default, not just delinquent. If just because you missed a payment doesn't mean that the debt collector is covered by the Federal Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. So they have a different set of rules. Once it's in default, the debt collector is then subject to the Federal Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. And when they make false representation, when they make false statements, you can sue the debt collector. Now, the outcome of that kind of a suit is something that you have to watch very carefully because sometimes it's not worth the effort to sue the debt collector over the false statement. If they say, for example, your loan is in default when it's actually just delinquent, that's only worth a little bit of money. It's worth maybe $1,000. If, on the other hand, they tell you that your rehabilitation payment, the one that is permitted and specifically set out by federal law and the federal regulations, if they tell you that your financial situation is irrelevant to how much the repayment must be, if they say your payment must be $2,000, $1,000, $50, if they pick a number, if they're the ones that decide what that number is, they have made a false statement. And the fact that they will not permit you to enter into a repayment that cures the default, that is something that could be substantially valuable.
So what should the student borrower tell a student loan servicer or a student loan debt collector when they fall behind?
The first thing to do is to talk to the debt collector or debt servicer and talk to them about repayment options because it is the totality of the circumstances that governs what your payment is under the income-based, income-contingent, or PAYE repayment options. And that will allow you to do all sorts of neat things. They start with saying you have to make a payment of at least $200, and you say, I can't afford $200, I can only afford $50 or $20 or whatever your number is. Once they are willing to engage with you and say, okay, why can you only afford that? They will send you a variety of paperwork and say, show me your income, show me your expenses, tell me what your financial situation looks like, and they will work with you to come up with how much your repayment is under the federal programs that permit it. And that's basically a spectacular solution because it allows you to make a reasonable and affordable payment. And that's actually very important because the statute actually uses that language, reasonable and affordable payment.
Now, I understand there are also situations that allow the student loan to be entirely, I guess, discharged or forgiven. Can you tell us what those are all about?
There are two major groups of people in that area. The first one is relatively new, and that is people who are employed in public service or nonprofit employment are eligible for a discharge of their loan after making 10 years and 120 months of reasonable and affordable payments. That includes teachers and police officers and all sorts of things like that. You can only afford a relatively modest payment. You can only afford $50 a month, $100 a month, whatever. And annually, they're going to want to review your financial picture, and you have to make payments every month for 10 years. During that entire period, you must still be employed in the nonprofit or government service. At the end of that 10-year period, the balance of your loan will be discharged administratively.
And you mention another type of discharge of a student loan, or possible other types of discharges.
Yes. There are a number of other ones. The primary ones are loans that would be under some sort of hardship, or there are a variety of other administrative discharges, that, and there are just so many of them that are possible that it's difficult for me to even go through all the different possibilities. Some of them are ability to benefit, which is related to fraudulent loans and fraudulent schools, and were you ever qualified to go to that school, all sorts of things like that. Those are just some of the possibilities.
And the other real big question about student loans is bankruptcy. Are federal student loans ever dischargeable in bankruptcy? And if so, under what circumstances?
The answer is that student loans are possible to discharge. It is very difficult to get them discharged, but it's possible. Most people, including a lot of lawyers, just simply presume that a student loan is not dischargeable in bankruptcy. The truth of the matter is that there is a three-step analysis which requires an analysis of whether or how much they've made an effort to make payments, whether or not repayment of any amount would amount to a hardship on the borrower, and what efforts they've made at doing something to fix their situation. So it's a complicated calculus, but it's not an automatic one way or the other.
Well, thank you very much, Jason. We have been talking with Jason Crumbine. He is an attorney at Crumbine Consumer Legal Services. We have been speaking this week about federal student loans. Jason will be back with us next week, and we will be speaking at that time about private student loans, which is another big area of student loan law. Thank you so much for being on the show, Jason.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm Marty Wegbright, host of the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. Remember when radio used to be real people spinning real records? Remember when news and talk programs used to be insightful and relevant? We at WRIR do too. WRIR DJs hand select the music they play each week. WRIR also features locally produced news and talk covering local, national, and international stories. We are Richmond Independent Radio, radio for the rest of us. And you, our listeners, make it possible. Call 622-9747 to make your gift or donate online at www.wrir.org. Thank you. That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on this show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Wage claims. reverse mortgages, wills. You won't be informed about these issues anywhere other than on this radio station, WRIR. If you want to continue hearing Law You Need to avoid getting ripped off, please call 622-9747 to make your gift or donate online at www.wrir.org to keep Law for the Rest of Us on Radio for the Rest of Us. Student loan debt in the U.S. now tops $1 trillion, more than all credit card debt combined. Join us next week when consumer law attorney Jason Crumbine explains private student loans, your legal rights about them, and what to do if you are contacted by a debt collector trying to collect a private student loan. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbrandt.